Interracial marriage was illegal at one time or another in most American states. It wasn't until 1967 that the Supreme Court overturned the remaining anti-miscegenation laws. But there are many whites and African Americans who are still uncomfortable with or even opposed to interracial romance. My guest Randall Kennedy is the author of the new book Interracial Intimacies: Sex, Marriage, Identity, and Adoption. His previous book was about the changing meaning of a word that is a terrible epithet but has become almost a term of endearment in part of hip-hop culture. That book, titled Nigger, The Strange Career of a Troublesome Word, has just come out in paperback. Randall Kennedy is a professor at Harvard Law School and served as a law clerk to Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. Now, you're a law professor, so obviously you researched a lot of the legal aspects of interracial relationships. Now, at one time, there were 42 states that banned intermarriage. What was the legal case for the state interceding and making intermarriage illegal?
Interracial marriage was viewed for a long time as a real menace. There were some people who thought that it was against the teachings of the Bible. So frankly, even in the 1960s, there were judges who said, marriage across the race line is against the teachings of the Bible. If God had wanted, clearly God did not want people of different races to intermarry. That's why, different races were put on different continents, and it's only because of man's intervention that people have different races have been able to get together anyway. The main thing going on, of course, was white supremacist, white separatist notions, the idea that America should be a white man's country, and one way of keeping it a white man's country would be to police the race line.
How carefully were the laws enforced?
It's difficult to tell, frankly, the degree of energy that was put into the enforcement of anti-miscegenation laws. But one thing I did find is that the private enforcement mechanisms were sometimes more in evidence than the resort to criminal law. So, for instance, imagine the following episode. A white man who has an estate, a wealthy white man, dies. He leaves his estate to his wife. Well, let's imagine that the white man's brothers and sisters get angry because, after all, the white man has died. He has this big estate. They don't have any of it. They hire a private investigator. The private investigator finds out that the wife's grandmother, or maybe even great-grandmother, was colored. The brothers and sisters of the dead man then go and challenge the putative widow's right to the estate. If she is determined to be colored under state law, that means that she was never legally married to the man. That means that she should not get his estate. That means that the children that she has had with this man are now deemed to be illegitimate. But I found hundreds of cases of private enforcement. Often these cases would be brought by resentful, angry relatives.
Although there are no longer any anti-miscegenation laws on the books, there are still certain prohibitions against adopting children of another race. What are some of those prohibitions?
Well, until recently, there were states that had laws on the books that required strong racial matching policies. For instance, in California, until relatively recently, social welfare officials were directed to search for adoptive homes of the same race as a child who was eligible for adoption. Now, those laws have been essentially superseded by a federal law. A federal law that was passed in 1994 and then a federal law that was passed in 1996, which prohibits race matching by any entity that is taking money from the federal government. But on the ground, race matching still exists. Throughout many areas of the United States, probably most areas of the United States, there is still a very strong inclination to try to place children of a given race with adults of the same race for purposes of adoption. As you know, I'm quite critical of race matching for a variety of reasons.
What are your reasons?
Yeah, well, there are a couple. First, race matching has had the consequence of condemning children to institutionalized care for long periods of time, or for foster care, where they're bumped around from one insecure, household to another. It seems clear to me that children need security in their lives. They need continuity in their lives. They need someone who is going to view that child as, you know, their child, and someone who is going to be willing to be a permanent parent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A second reason is that I don't think that the state should in any way suggest that the monoracial family is in any way superior to the multiracial family. And I think that that's an inescapable inference that is drawn when state policy, you know, tries to create monoracial families, viewing them as more natural than multiracial families. Now, as for the question of identification, you know, inculcating a correct sense of racial identity, first of all, the whole question of what is a correct sense of racial identity is itself very controversial. There are probably all sorts of, you know, notions of racial identity. We have a pluralistic nation, pluralistic country. We should applaud pluralism. And in this context, pluralism, it seems to me, means being willing to facilitate and tolerate and encourage all sorts of family formations, multiracial and, you know, any other sort of family formation that's that makes sense.
No, I'm sure a lot of your readers wonder, well, is Randall Kennedy married to a white woman, and is that why he wrote this book? And
yeah, a lot of people, I'm sure, want to know that. I'm married to a black woman, very happily married to a wonderful black woman. So that's fine. I'm not making any claim that interracial relationships are necessarily better than, you know, relationships between people of the same race. All I'm saying is that people ought not feel embarrassed, ought not feel bad, ought not feel ashamed if their affections carry them, if their affections cross the race line.
My guest is Randall Kennedy. His new book is called Interracial Intimacies. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Randall Kennedy is my guest. He's the author of the new book, Interracial Intimacies, Sex, Marriage, Identity, and Adoption. His previous book was Nigger, The Strange Career of a Troublesome Word, and it's all about the history of that word and the controversy over its uses. Randall Kennedy, among the things that happened after your book was published was that there was an episode of Boston Public, the Fox TV series set in an integrated high school, an episode in that series about the use of that word in class, and I think, you know, the students had to read an excerpt of your book in that class as part of their assignment. So I'm wondering if you saw the episode and what you thought of the episode and how they handled the controversy over the word.
I did see the episode. I thought it was an excellent episode. Very complex. I thought that it allowed people with different points of view to articulate those points of view with reason and with power. And that's one of the things that made it a very compelling instance of television.
Yeah, well, among the issues in that episode was, you know, does a white teacher have the right to teach a class about that word? Can white students use that word since the black students were using it all the time in the context of talking to each other and in quoting rap lyrics? And so, you know, every point of view was represented within the episode.
Right. And it was a very realistic rendering of controversies that are ongoing all across the United States. And one reason why I know that to be the case is that in the aftermath of the airing of that episode, I got hundreds of letters from across the country from teachers and students telling me about, controversies at their schools. I got a lot of papers where teachers had actually asked students to write about that particular episode or write about my book or write about articles in the newspaper that talked about my book. That episode also helped garner my book an audience that, frankly, I had not considered. I now hear from high school students a lot. They write me, they send me their papers, they send me questions all the time because they were introduced to my book through that episode on Boston Public.
So did they call you and say, we're using your book in one of the episodes for the series, just wanted you to know?
No, it was a little bit more involved than that. The producer called and said that they were thinking about doing an episode involving a controversy regarding the N-word. They heard about my book. They said, we'd like to read your book. So I sent the book to them. Then a couple of weeks later, they sent me a draft of the script and asked for my reactions to it. I sent back a little memo giving, my reactions. Then they sent another draft, and the second time around, they said, listen, we'd like to use your book as a prop in the show, and we'd like to use your name in the show, and, is that okay? And I said, sure, it's okay. And then they went ahead and did the show, and I saw it, and I really liked it. And it's certainly been helpful in spreading the word about my book.
And have you been saying the N-word or using the full word when you talk about it?
Oh, I use the word nigger. I mean, there is a place for euphemism. I don't get mad when people use the word N-word. But the name of my book is Nigger: The Strange Career of a Troublesome Word, and depending on the context, I use N-word. It was funny. I was on a radio show where the host of the show said, "Listen, the station had a strong policy, no exceptions. Nigger could not be pronounced on the show." I went on the show. We spoke for 1 hour. It was a radio program. Never once was the word nigger used, although I did spell it out for purposes of identifying my book. And we had a wonderful, wonderful discussion.
Well, how'd you feel about that? Because obviously the purpose of that policy is to protect you and other African Americans from being offended and from being intentionally or inadvertently insulted. But here you are trying to kind of start an intellectual conversation about the use of the word, the origins of the word, the linguistics of, all this stuff, and you're not allowed to use it.
Well, I argued. I said on the show, I said, I think the station's policy is not a good policy. For one thing, when you make a word or symbol tabooed expression, you give it a certain allure. And I don't think that this word should be given that sort of power. And so I'm against the sort of policies that were the policy of this particular radio program. But I mention it because it was interesting to discuss my book on a program where the title of my book could not be mentioned.
Right. Part of your book was devoted to the word's use in pop culture, in rap music, movies, comedy routines. I'm wondering if you're finding any more or less sightings of the word since the publication of your book.
Well, the book, caused quite a stir, and there were a lot of articles generated by the book itself. I think some people have become considerably more self-conscious in the aftermath of my book. And, of course, controversies continue. Recently in St. Louis, a school teacher was publicly reprimanded because she gave out to her class a chapter of my book. It was almost, frankly, a parody of some of the things that I talk about and discuss in the book. But that happens, and I'm sure it will continue to happen.
Was the teacher white or black?
I do not know. I get the sense that she was white, but I don't know that for sure.
Because I'm thinking maybe that if she was white, the reason why she was reprimanded might have been part because some people think it's presumptuous and inappropriate for a white teacher to pretend to have any authority on this subject. Which is part of what the Boston Public episode was about.
That's right. And some people do have that point of view, and it's a point of view that should be opposed. This is a teacher teaching in a public school. The authority that she has should be an authority that comes not from her skin color, but from what she knows, the energy she brings to the job, her effectiveness in trying to educate the upcoming generation of Americans. That's where her authority should lie, not in what she happens to be.
Well, Randall Kennedy, good to talk with you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Randall Kennedy's new book is called Interracial Intimacies. His book, Nigger, The Strange Career of a Troublesome Word, has just come out in paperback.